Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Life continues for Spartacus on this Martin Luther King Day. Stars will go forward with a second season of this popular drama without Andy Whitfield in the title role. For now, there's a prequel, Gods of the Arena, starting Friday night. We'll size up both programs when executive producer Stephen S. DeKnight joins me next. Switch from Toga Times to Trying Times in our next half hour when we discuss Fairly Legal, USA Network's dramedy about a mediator with creator and executive producer Michael Sardo. Only 3 weeks into 2011, there's no shortage of TV subject matter. Breakout cable series all over the place, developments at CES, OWN, and the Comcast-NBC Universal merger. We'll sort all this out and more with Fancast.com columnist Adam Buckman. Also ahead, breaking news, Discovery Health returns via Fit TV. Golden Globe TV winners, a TV station blackout averted, and another contender for the Kennedys. Happy MLK Day, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from Stars near Bryant Park in New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Happy to have you with us. Hope you're making it part of your holiday Monday. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you live from the Executive Office of Stars, the premium cable network near Bryant Park here in New Weber, York. And if you want to talk to our guests over the next 90 minutes or so, give us a call, 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us live on Blog Talk Radio. And our chat room is taking a holiday, but it will be back next time. So if you need to communicate with us, with your question or comment, use the phone. That's why it's there. Stephen S. DeKnight from Spartacus and Gods of the Arena joining us shortly from L.A. But first, a breaking news note. Just 2 weeks after making way for the Oprah Winfrey Network, Discovery Health announced it will return February 1st as a channel showing digital and digital and cable space, that's cable and satellite, with Fit TV. Discovery Health had more than 80 million households able to view its programming when OWN took over January 1st. As we brand Discovery Fit and Health, the channel will be available to about 50 million homes. Fit TV content will occupy mornings on the reconstituted service managed by Discovery Communications. No word over why Discovery Health will get a second life, and we are trying to get the person involved in that call on our show either Friday or next week. We will keep you posted. Once again, on February 1st, Discovery Health returns on a reconstituted Fit TV, new title, Discovery Health and Fit TV. More news notes at the top of the next hour. Spartacus was one of the major premium cable stories happening last year. It was on Starz, started about a year ago, and it was a major success story. It is coming back for a second season, but without its breakout star, Andy Whitfield. However, on Friday night, Starz will premiere a prequel to the show called Gods of the Arena. And joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer and head writer of both programs, making a second appearance on our program, Stephen S. DeKnight. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Bring us up to speed on the decision to go forward with a second season without your breakout star.
You know, it was a very difficult season. Going back in time, the reason we did a prequel is because, unfortunately, after we had wrapped season one, Andy Whitfield discovered he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he needed to go through a series of very serious treatments for it. So we would be down for about a year. We wouldn't have him for, you know, about 6 months, and then he needed to recover. So we wanted to make sure we kept the show alive, kept everybody employed, of course, since the show employs hundreds of people. And we also had a story we thought would be good to tell. To fill in a lot of the blanks of the characters and situations that we referred to in season one. So we came up with this idea for a prequel, going back in time several years before Spartacus actually arrives at the Ludus. And we shot that, and our plan was to return to season two right after the prequel, after Andy had recovered. And he had gotten a clean bill of health, everything was moving forward, and then very unfortunately he discovered that his cancer had returned, and he had to remove himself from the role altogether to take care of his health. So then we were faced with a really hard choice of whether or not to continue with the show or just call it a day with those 19 episodes. Andy was really the deciding factor for me. He sent an email to us saying that he was very proud of the work he did. He loves the character. He loves the story and felt like it deserved to be told all the way to the end, and that he would fully support recasting the character. which is no easy feat. I don't think there's been a TV drama where the main lead has been recast, ever. So it's a huge gamble for Stars. It's obviously a huge gamble for us, but we very much believe in the story as much as Andy does and wanted to see it continue.
Well, recasting, Stephen, is not a new precedent. It has been done in sitcoms before, from the life of Riley to Bewitched. Most
yes.
people don't know
yes.
that Jackie Gleason was the sure. original Chester Riley on television. He replaced William Bendix, who had done on radio and in a movie, and then a year or two later, Life of Riley came back on television with Bendix in the role. What's the fine line that you have to deal with, particularly since this is drama as opposed to comedy, to having a lead role replaced?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult. And, we racked our brains to think about a lead character being replaced. And you mentioned Life of Riley, which we had discussed. But just the sheer fact that you have to go all the way back to Life of Riley, a show that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, unfortunately, just shows you how rare a situation it is. And I couldn't think of anything in a drama where that actually happens.
Stephen, I can think of one close. In the Lone Ranger, there were a season or two that Clayton Moore, the original Lone Ranger in the 50s, was replaced by another actor, John Hart.
You got me there.
And then Moore came back for another few seasons.
Right. And again, we have to go all the way back to the Lone Ranger. For us, it was obviously an incredibly difficult decision and very... very difficult show-wise because we build up so much of this show. It's not the blood, it's not the sex, it's not the violence, it's the relationship between the characters, and Spartacus, Andy, was at the center of all that. All of these struggles and triumphs that his character went through, people associate with Andy. And now we have to bring in a new actor, but still keep all of those emotional connections with the other actors. So it's a tall order, and we've been searching everywhere for someone to step into his sandals, and it's not easy. It, like I said, it's definitely a gamble. We realize it's a gamble, but we're going to give it a shot and tell the best damn story we can.
When will you make the call on who takes the role?
I believe we're going to start shooting season two sometime in April. So I would suspect that we'll probably make the call very soon, within the next few weeks.
And before we go to Gods of the Arena and hopefully get some phone calls too, what is the latest on Andy's condition?
I hear he's fighting the good fight. It's obviously a difficult one. Andy, quite reasonably, is very private about his health and his family. But all indications I've heard are, he's... he's going through it like a champ.
And we, of course, wish him the very, very best in his future endeavors. And starting with, of course, getting his health back in speed.
Right.
Stephen S. DeKnight, executive producer and head writer of Spartacus and Gods of the Arena, joining us live from Los Angeles here on the first half hour Tomorrow Be Televised. We are just getting started. We're live from Starz' executive offices here in New York, and we invite you to be part of the conversation. Do it with a phone call at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us live here on Blog Talk Radio. The prequel starts Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. What can we expect out of it?
We really learned a lot from doing season one. I think it's no secret. I've said this before. We got off to a bit of a shaky start as we were experimenting to find the right tone of the show all the way through, from the visuals to the action to the writing. But quickly found our footing. The great thing about Gods of the Arena is, having gone through that experience, we hit the ground running in episode one, and everything that was great about season one, we managed to front load with the first episode. And you can expect everything you loved in season one and more. There's obviously the blood, the sex, the violence that everyone seems to enjoy, but more importantly to me, there's the double crossing, there's the relationships, there's love gained and lost. It's just a fantastic potboiler of a prequel.
Mm-hmm. And Lucy Lawless, who was a co-star in Spartacus, people know her, of course, from Xena, Warrior Princess, she's back too.
Yeah, she plays a major role in the prequel. We have her and John Hannah, and it was fantastic to revisit the characters of Lucretia and Bodiatus. Bodiatus obviously seriously dead at the end of season one, and Lucretia, you know, seriously wounded. But to have these two characters together again, it's just a joy to write for them.
When you were here on the show a year ago, we talked about the fact that the critics were at the beginning not kind to your show.
To say
they
the
were
least.
Saying it was too much blood, too much guts, not enough substance. But you said on this program, hang in until the third, the fourth, the fifth episode because
right.
of what you just said. We are getting our groove. We're getting our tone. We're putting it together. What lesson did you apply out of that, the road to getting the tone right, did you apply to this prequel? Because this prequel has less episodes to deal with, and obviously
right.
you've got to get that story up quickly.
Yes. Yes. You know, one of the biggest lessons we learned was really based on the first episode of season one. If you look at from episode two on, it becomes a much more sure-footed show. Basically, the reason for that is we were concentrating much more on the relationships and the interactions of the characters than we were on big battle scenes. Unfortunately, episode one last year turned out to be so massively expensive that before we shot the script, about a week before we shot the script, we had to cut out a lot of scenes to be able to afford the action. And a lot of that was the connective tissue scenes of the characters. And, you know, it ultimately became, you know, we kind of careened from one action scene to the next. So one of the biggest lessons we learned is, you know, the action is great. It will always be a part of our show. We're very proud of the action. But the action has to be supported by the emotion, or else, you know, it just falls flat. And also, you know, this was a grand experiment. We were trying to do a 300-esque show on television, which is a massive undertaking. And, you know, there was a lot of R&D on that. And I think early on, you know, we leaned a little bit too much towards the 300. One of the comments we often got that we were, you know, a cheap 300 knockoff. And we've always said we love Zack Snyder. We are greatly influenced by his brilliance of how he's pushed what you can do in filmmaking. And really wanted to honor that and not so much copy that. And it took us a few episodes to find our own thing. And then I think we finally did. But ultimately for me, it all comes down to the emotions of the characters and their interactions that I think is what made season one ultimately a success.
So with Gods of the Arena, what do we learn about these characters? What do we learn about the period at the time, the culture at the time, the environment at the time? What insights do you hope we get as an audience that we didn't know beforehand from watching movies or television about that period?
Right. Well, to start with, on the character side, the audience will get a much deeper understanding of what made these people the people you see in season one. You understand why Bodiatus is the way he is, why Lucretia is the way she is. We talk about Bodiatus' father in season one, but you never see him because he's, you know, he has passed on at that point. But one of the major aspects of this prequel is the relationship with Bodiatus and his father and how that informs the relationship with Bodiatus and his wife, Lucretia. The time period, you know, we go even deeper into how this is such a dog-eat-dog world that you can be a free Roman, you can be a man like Bodiatus who has a ludus and gladiators, but he's still not on the top rung. He's still striving to be better. There's very much it's almost like a boxing promoter theme in the prequel, where you see how Bodiatus is trying to get his men, his fighters, into better position, and how just life is such a hard scrabble back then that, you know, at any turn you can be murdered, you can be betrayed. And, you know, it's just the thing we love about that time period is that it's so violent and visceral. And as always, you know, love is the thing that ultimately people strive for, and it's ultimately the thing that gets them through these rough times.
When you started Spartacus last year, Stephen, you did have some reference points. You had the original book by Howard Fast. You had, obviously, encyclopedias with stories about the time period. You had the Kirk Douglas movie directed brilliantly by Stanley Kubrick. With a prequel, you don't have that. It's like you make it up. What's the fun about doing that?
Well, I mean, it was wide open. And, you know, when we originally approached the Spartacus story, there was actually so little known about the man, just pieces and scraps of information throughout history, a lot of them written 150 years after the fact. We had a lot of leeway. Also, we were dealing with a period of time in the Spartacus story where it's mentioned he was at a gladiator school, and that's pretty much all. The only thing you find out about the guy at the gladiator school is that he was at a gladiator school and he broke out. So we had a lot of leeway as to the story we could tell there. But the prequel is even more liberating because we have no historical reference points that we have to hit. So we could basically do whatever we wanted as long as it still felt part and parcel of the world we created in season one.
You know, it's interesting when you reference Spartacus, particularly whether it's your show or the Kirk Douglas movie, that at the heart it's a story about civil rights. And, of course, today is the holiday for Martin Luther King Jr.,
right,
who was a liberator for civil rights, particularly for people of color. And I wonder if that gives you pause when you do the show or particularly the struggles of today, whether at some point you want to make the show more allegorical to sort of have a message for us in our time period.
Oh, absolutely. You know, obviously it's different from McCarthyism and naming names back when the Howard Fast novel came out and the Stanley Kubrick movie followed. Not quite the same thing. I mean, I love both of those, especially the anti-naming names I Am Spartacus scene, which really, really resonated at the time. It's a little bit of a different time now socially, but the relevance that I strive to hit moving forward is this idea of, you know, the haves and the have-nots, that there is, for all intents and purposes, a slave class of workers now, that, you know, slave for the corporations, slave for the massively wealthy billionaires. There's an incredible disproportionate spread of wealth, especially in this country where the middle class has been squeezed out, and you've got lower class and people who have a lot of money. And, you know, I'm not saying that we should turn socialist or anything, but there's definitely, I think, a parallel to be made between those who have power and those who don't, and how those who don't suffer for it.
Stephen is tonight the executive producer and head writer of Spartacus and its prequel, Gods of the Arena, which premieres this Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Starz. He's our guest live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Be Televised. This is Simon Applebaum here with you live on Blog Talk Radio. We're coming to you direct from the executive office of Starz, the pay cable network, near Bryant Park here in Midtown Manhattan. And we invite you to be in the dialogue. You do it by calling us up at 1-646-652-2906 with your question or comment. That's 1-646-652-2906. And coming up our next half hour, another program which is happening this week, USA Network's first new series of the year, Fairly Legal. It's all about a mediator and what she goes through. Premieres Thursday night at 10 o'clock. Michael Sardo, the creator and executive producer, live with us exclusively in our next half hour. Last year, there were very few new shows or returning shows, Stephen, on cable that were coming aboard the week you premiered. And this week, it's a totally different scene. High set of new shows premiering tonight. Being Human on Sci-Fi, Skins, very controversial on MTV. We mentioned Fairly Legal coming Thursday night. You come on Friday night. How are you folks getting the word out to encourage your fans to not only be part of the prequel, but also bring new people in?
You know, the good old-fashioned way, a lot of advertising, a lot of billboards, a lot of interviews. I think what's a little different this year is that the show actually has a buzz from how we ended last year. So people have been very excited to see it. Hopefully that'll draw in viewers. one of the great things about last season is practically every week our numbers went up, which is really unheard of in television, except when we ran afoul of the Olympics, where everybody's numbers went down. So I think that, you know, we really built on word of mouth and people seeing it. I know quite a few people were turned off by the first episode, but the people that kept watching, you know, we slowly built a buzz. I'm hoping that that buzz continues and translates into a larger audience, because I think the prequel is definitely, definitely deserving of that. And I want to throw a special shout-out to Sam Witwer in Being Human. Sam and I met. He actually auditioned for Spartacus the first time around, but he was tied up with Battlestar, and we couldn't get him. No, actually, it wasn't Battlestar. He was actually tied up with Smallville at the time. But a great guy, and I'm very interested to see that show. It looks like they've done a fantastic job of translating the UK original.
We had, in fact, two of the executive producers, Anna Frick and Jeremy Carver, on a show a week ago. They're husband and wife team, by the way, mm-hmm. one of the latest of the bunch, the growing number of husband and wife teams producing and running their own shows. And what's interesting is that we're seeing this, like, mini blossoming or mini festival of UK shows, England shows becoming American shows, and two of mm-hmm. them tonight, Human and Skins.
Right. Both shows that I loved watching the UK versions. I'm also fascinated to see how Skins does, having my roots in, you know, I started in the business working on MTV's Undressed, what I like to consider a bit of a low-rent, less successful, pandering version of Skins. I thought Skins was brilliant, the UK version. And just from the advertisement, it looks like MTV has done the right thing by the show. So I'm very interested to see that, too.
What do you think about Stars? When you started this a year ago, you were like the opening attraction of Stars' move into very dramatic, big-budget, spectacular television. And now you're like leading off this, what looks like it's going to be an amazing year of promoing on Stars. Camelot follows in April. Then another BBC show, Torchwood, has a new season, specially produced with Stars. And then coming up, two more shows, Boss with Kelsey Grammer out of Chicago, and the Magic City program, which will take a look at Miami in the 60s, and then, of course, your second season.
Yeah, you know, it's thrilling to see Stars develop in such a way, especially with the addition of bringing in Chris Albrecht to run things. He did such a great job back when he was on HBO. It's really a different feeling this year. You know, when we first started, it was, I suppose it must have been like the early days of doing original programming for HBO. It's, you know, Stars was known as basically an outlet for movies. And they had one show, Crash, which was actually produced by Lionsgate, that they were airing. This was the first show that Stars, Spartacus was the first show that Stars actually produced themselves. And, you know, there was a lot of, there was a steep learning curve, I think, for Stars at the time. But the plus side of that is they let us do whatever the hell we wanted, and Spartacus came out of that. Now it's, you really start to see the machine getting up and running. I think they've got a great slate this year. I'm very excited to see Camelot and Torchwood and Boss and Magic City coming up in the next season. You just really get the feeling that there's momentum now. And I know of a lot of stuff that Stars has in development, all of it very, very exciting. And it's just a thrill to be at a network at that inception stage.
Well, since you said there's stuff in development, do you want to give us any details?
You know what? They would have me murdered in my sleep if I did. But everything from science fiction to more period drama to action, they're really casting a nice wide net. But also with an eye towards, they're really looking at how do all these shows kind of go together. That's the great thing about the slate this year. You go from Spartacus to Camelot to Torchwood. I think it's a nice natural fit.
And they also may have the sequel to Pillars of the Earth, which We had Roland Barr, the executive producer, on live from Munich last summer. The show went on to win a Golden Globe nomination, lost to Carlos from the first ever award for the Sundance Channel, of a major note. And assuming your production schedule goes, when will the second season of Spartacus come on?
I believe we're looking at early 2012. Probably, if everything works out, and schedules change, of course, it could come earlier, it could come later, but probably right around this time next year.
Can we make a date for a third interview on the program?
No, absolutely. I would love to come back and promote the long-awaited second season of Spartacus.
We would love to have you back, Stephen. And by the way, you were our most popular podcast guest last year, nearly 3,000 downloads. You led by a mile, and we would love to have you back for the second season.
I would like nothing better.
Meanwhile, you can get the new prequel to Stars, Gods of the Arena, Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on Stars. Check your local listings for where Stars is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details, you go on the web to www.stars.com. It's www.stars.com. Stephen S. Tonight, executive producer, head writer on both Spartacus and the prequel. Good luck with the prequel Friday night. All of our best to Andy. All of our best to you, your cast and crew. And thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And all the best. Take care.
Thank you.
Stephen S. Tonight joining us live from Los Angeles. You are listening to Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We are the internet radio show that covers the world of television. And today on this Martin Luther King Monday afternoon holiday for most, we are bringing it to you live from the Executive Office of Stars, the premium cable network, Midtown Manhattan, near the wonderful Bryant Park, home to the New York Public Library. Coming up on Friday, among our guests, maybe one of the most unique we've ever had. He's not only the producer of his own reality show, he is a co-subject with his wife. Fred Ruckel will join us, and he and his new wife, Natasha, just built a log cabin in the Catskill Mountains of New York. It's depicted in a new DIY series called Dream House, which premiered 2 weeks ago, and their effort to get the house was anything but a dream, and it was all captured on videotape. And Fred will join us live to tell us all about it. I think you will find it very absorbing radio. Also, remember the days of Superstations, WTBS under Ted Turner in Atlanta, and WWR here in New York under Eastern Microwave, and yes, WGN in Chicago, the home of the Cubs in baseball and so much more. And guess what? There is still a Superstation in America, and that is WGN America. And we will talk and find out about where it's going with Sean Compton. He's the programming chief at GN Tarrant Tribune Broadcasting out of Chicago. So join us for a very interesting Tomorrow We Televise. Coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, very simple way to do it. Join us on our homepage anytime at www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. Incidentally, all four of our programs so far this year have all gone over 100 replays in 48 hours or less. Our first show 2 weeks ago, nearly 400 replays as of early this afternoon. And our show last week, which included Anna Frick and Jeremy Craven from Being There, which premieres tonight on Sci-Fi at 9 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time, nearly 200 replays. So we thank all of you for checking us out on replay if you can't catch us live. And keep doing it. Tell your friends, too. Once again, the address, www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. Another way to catch us, podcast. You can download us on any mobile device through iTunes.com, Zoom.net, other websites ranked by Sonobite. We're also featured on TiVo, on any make or model of that digital video recorder, and available to teachers and students around the country through cable in the classroom. The podcast address there is www.ciconline.org. That's www.ciconline.org. We average about 25,000 downloads a month. We're over 15,000 going in today. So keep the downloads coming and tell your friends. When we come back, more news notes. And Michael Sardo, the creator and executive producer of Fairly Legal, that premieres this Thursday night on USA Network. But right now, at the bottom of the hour, we pause for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on earth, and then some. www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 7 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. It's your home for Dr. Empowerment tonight with 30 Rock co-star Kevin.com Brown. That's Kevin.com Brown tonight on Dr. Empowerment, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Televise. I'm Applebaum here with you live from New York. We're joining you from the executive office of Premium Network Stars near Bryant Park in Midtown Manhattan. And if you have a question or comment for any of our guests in the next hour or so, give us that call, 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you catch us live on Blog Talk Radio. If in case you tuned in late, our chat room, normally up and running, is not. It's taking a holiday, but we'll be back with us on Friday. This Thursday night, USA Network gets its original programming act together with Royal Pains at 9 and its first new show of the year at 10. The new show is called Fairly Legal, and it's about a mediator, someone who's a little bit disenchanted with working in a law firm, decides to strike out on her own as a mediator, and really mediates all sorts of stuff. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer and creator, Michael Sardo. Michael, welcome in.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me.
So is this art imitating life? Were you a mediator at one point?
No, I was not, though I do tend to get in the middle of a lot of arguments. No, I became interested in this area about 6-7 years ago. Just hit a point where friends were getting divorced, and it always started the same way. It's very amicable. We're just going to file the paperwork. Everything will be fine. And you'd run into them again, and a war had broken out. And I saw that pattern happen over and over again. And then some friends were getting divorced, and I said, is it a bad split? And said, no, very amicable. I said, okay. And I knew where it was going to lead because it always leads the same place. And I ran into them again. I said, how'd it go? Oh, we're done. We just went to this mediator and sat down and talked and hashed it all out, and everything's fine. It got me interested in what is this thing of mediation, which is essentially two people have a problem, put them in a room face-to-face, send in someone to help them figure out a solution. And I developed a show, a half-hour comedy, actually, which I pitched about a divorce mediator, and it didn't sell. And 5 years later, I pitched a movie with a friend of mine who was an exec and didn't sell that either. But the area stuck with me. I thought it's got the fundamental tenets of interesting conflict. All the things that the reason why law shows keep coming on, there are these dramatic moments in our lives. Something big is happening, and we're trying to settle in a courtroom. But in a mediation, you take away all the artifice. You strip away everything that has to do with the trappings of the law, and you just get to the fundamental nature of that conflict. And I thought, what is going on? What are the stories? And what kind of person is comfortable wading into the middle of that morass, into that gray area where it's not so black and white, and feeling like they can get lost for a while but yet emerge on the other end with a solution? And out of that came the show.
In fact, many people remember law shows, remember L.A. Law, and they remember the character played by Corbin Burnson and Arnie Becker. And where'd you see him? Mediating divorce disputes.
Yes, and it's a very... You know, there have been glimpses of it, but there's never been a show just about mediation. And it's become more and more popular as a whole, as we've gotten a bit disenfranchised for very good reasons, I think, with the legal system. You know, any large system has to have many aspects of it which are one size fits all. But, you know, you send 10 people into a store and say it's a one size fits all store. Just grab what you want. And everyone will come out with a shirt, but very few people are going to look good in it or be happy with it. They'll say, yeah, I got a shirt, but it's not my size, it's not my color, it's one size fits all. Whereas mediation, you have to get involved personally in the process. It can be uglier because you don't have the buffers of the legal system to shield your emotions from coming out, but ultimately, to me, more interesting dramatically.
So how does Fairly Legal play on this mediation theme? With this woman, who is played by a newcomer, we'll get to that person in a moment, who I think may be a breakout star this year, having seen excerpts of the show. How does it play out with this person who is dissatisfied with being in a law office and decides, this is the way I'm going to go with my life?
Kate Reed was a successful lawyer at her father's law firm. But what started to creep up on her was the fact that to be a successful lawyer, you have to accept that there are cases that don't work out the way you think they should if you have any kind of a sense of justice and any kind of a barometer for truth. So you'll see someone get wrongly convicted or wrongly acquitted because of the law, not because of the truth of what transpired that brought them to court. And yet what you have to do as a lawyer is say, well, the law will change and that won't happen again, or the person will get convicted of something else, or the person, or yes, that person shouldn't have gone to jail. That's just the law. It's going to change. You have to accept that kind of ancillary damage, because otherwise you can't be part of the system. Kate is someone who started to see the human cost of that ancillary damage, and that's all she could see, and couldn't accept it. So she broke from her father, broke from her ex-husband, who's the assistant district attorney for San Francisco, and became a mediator. She didn't leave the law, but she resigned from the bar and wanted to find a purer way to practice the fundamental nature of it, which is you have a conflict, I have a conflict, let's find a solution. And so it plays out in mediation is used in all different ways. There are mediations between countries. It's much more than divorces, between businesses, between it's now being used in instances of domestic violence. The courts are pushing a lot of cases toward mediation, realizing that there are certain things the courts aren't set up to handle, and that are better handled in mediation. And then also people like the option because it's faster, it's cheaper, and it's more direct.
Michael Sardo, the creator and executive producer of Fairly Legal, is U.S. Network's first new series of this year, and it premieres Thursday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time, right after the new season of Royal Pains, an hour early. And Michael's our guest right now on Tomorrow We Televise, live from Los Angeles. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Thanks for making us part of your Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday Monday on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for Michael? Don't keep it to yourself. Don't be silent. Get in at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Talk about the person who plays Kate. Did you want all along a new, fresh face, someone who people have not seen a lot in the role? Did you want, let's say, as the case with Harry's Law premiering tonight on NBC, a talent of considerable stature like a Kathy Bates?
When you're casting a show, everyone goes about it differently. If you're casting a woman playing the age of Kathy Bates' character, it's unlikely that you're going to find an unknown to someone who became great at that age. For us, we cast a wide net. We looked at people who were known, who had amazing credits. We were looking for something very unusual. There's a scene in the opening of the pilot where Kate is on her way to work and winds up in the middle of a robbery. And she has to mediate a guy with a gun versus a guy with a bat, both adrenalized. And we get an idea of what Kate, just these skills that she has naturally, even outside of her work. In casting that scene, we had 90 women. I'd seen 90 women at one point. Every woman who came in and the casting director pulled out an imaginary gun, her finger, all 90 women did what all of us would do instinctively, is step back and went, whoa, take it easy. Sarah came in, Sarah Shahi, who plays Kate Reed, and went, whoa, and moved toward the gun. Completely counterintuitive. But you cannot solve conflict from a distance. And instantly, in that moment, I knew it was her, that she was the one. And I've never had a doubt. And Sarah has just been able to fill this role out and make it her own in a way that, to me, is quite spectacular.
Yeah, put my two cents in on this, Michael. I also saw that scene because that was shown on the promos for your program. And, yes, Sarah comes off beautifully. What's her background? As I said, she's a very fresh face. And USA, by the way, has had a very good track record with new faces in their programs, like Royal Pains, like White Collar, and so on down the line.
Well, you know, USA is I think they're expert at the adage that television makes stars. You know, you get to have people who don't necessarily carry a lot of baggage to the role. So you say, oh, it's that guy. He always plays the villain, so he's going to be the villain. You get to really meet these actors as the characters they're playing. And also, Mark Feuerstein on Royal Pains has a very, very long body of work. We just had never seen him as a lead. And a lot of other networks would say, well, that must be because he's not the lead. He's the best friend. So they have a great casting ability to take people who are good actors, but you may not have seen them as the center of a show, and they work beautifully as the center of a show. So Sarah's particular background, she was a regular on The L Word for a couple of seasons, and she did a very memorable episode of The Sopranos where she was Tony Soprano's peyote dealer in Las Vegas. And she also was the co-lead on Life with Damian Lewis on NBC. And she's barely recognizable as the woman on Life to the woman in our posters. And that goes again to the heart of why I cast her, because Sarah Shahi is the most rare combination. She's got leading lady looks with character actress abilities. And that is one of the most difficult things to find, because it's very easy to fall back when you're that beautiful on just your looks. But Sarah's never satisfied with performance.
Mm-hmm. What kind of mediation issues and situations will she come up with or come up against?
In the second episode, she has to mediate between the state of California and a bus bench lawyer who just picked up the client of a lifetime, a man who's been wrongly imprisoned for 25 years. And the question is, what is his life worth? What's 25 years of your life worth? And the person who was exonerated, he can't deal with it at all, and it leads to a very explosive series of events that Kate then has to mediate the consequences of those events. So very often our stories start off, just like in life, they start off being about one thing and turn out to be about something else. We have a story about a woman who bought the Social Security number of a woman who was dead so that she could enroll in the military because she was here illegally. She was brought here when she was 2 years old, and there was no clear path to citizenship for her. If she left the country, she would have to leave the country and wait to get back in. She came from Honduras. She doesn't even speak Spanish. She was raised American. She went to Afghanistan, served two tours with great honor, and then when she came back and started using that Social Security number, found out the woman was alive, and she gets imprisoned and is about to be deported when Kate gets involved. So we have a range of cases from the smallest cases where Kate is mediating between two guys at the law firm, one of whom is stealing the other guy's lunch, to cases involving immigration and prenuptial agreements and the kidnapping of a child who's being held as a Croatian consulate by his grandmother who wants to take her out of the country. So we can go with the smallest of small stories and to very large stories, always with an eye to making sure that they're relatable to us. They're things that you could really see happening in your own daily life because they're about fathers and sons and mothers and daughters and issues that you'll encounter in your own during the course of your day and week.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like there's going to be some diversity subtext to your show, Michael. And I'm raising this because not only being Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday, but also all day and last night, Turner Classic Movies was doing a sort of MLK celebration by running films that had a social justice, Southern justice, diversity, race, class issues in movies, such as In Heat of the Night, The Liberation of L.B. Jones, the final film directed by L.B. By William Wyler back in 1970. And before coming over here, I saw Crossfire, which was the award-winning movie from the 1940s dealing with Robert Ryan's character, an army officer who kills somebody simply because he's Jewish.
We do deal a lot with, you know, the show's set in San Francisco, and I was interested in why does a person become Kate Reed, and what's a city that could bring someone like this to life? And Kate needed to be forged in the crucible of a city that was multi-ethnic and with a great range of economic brackets. And the collision of all of those, which is really what America is about, creates misunderstanding and conflict that needs to be discussed. A recurring issue for her is the idea of letting people see the world, helping people see the world through the other person's eyes, which is one thing that a mediator does. We like to pretend that we're colorblind and there's no caste or class system in this country, but there very much is. You know, I'm from the Bronx, and I went to a very good school in Massachusetts, and I've been able to observe that whole spectrum of Americans. And very often people who grow up in the suburbs, wealthy suburbs particularly, think that the justice system is truly blind and fair. But what gets you labeled a criminal in the Bronx might be laughed off as a juvenile indiscretion in Greenwich, Connecticut. And Kate's someone who's acutely aware of that, as I am. And it's something that I think bears discussing.
Michael Sardo, the creator and executive producer of Fairly Legal. It premieres this Thursday night after Royal Pains on USA Network, 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time. He's our guest on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York, from the Executive Office of Stars here near Bryant Park in Midtown Manhattan. And we invite you to be part of the conversation. All it takes is you dialing in at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. If you just joined us, we don't have the chat room today, but we will have it on our next episode Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up at the top of the hour, we have more news notes for you, including a full recap of all the TV winners at the Golden Globe Awards last night. And then joining us, one of my favorite people covering television, Adam Buckman, now with Fancast.com, former TV editor at the New York Post. Michael, Harry's Law is also premiering tonight on NBC, and I saw a review in the New York Times that compared that show to your show. I don't know if you've seen that review, whether in person or online. I'm just wondering what you think about the fact that your show is premiering that week, and whether there's concern that you might get lumped into a review like that. In the case of Harry's Law, that review in the Times, your show came out sort of on the bottom end compared to Harry's Law. On the other hand, Harry's Law got a bad review in the USA Today by Robert Bianco this morning.
David Kelly is an old friend of mine. Saw him Thursday night. It's kind of funny to have shows premiering the same week. I think what we're trying to do is what we both like to write a good speech, and we both have points to make about everyone having a different and distinct point of view that they believe is right. David tends to go a little more fanciful in getting there, and I'm trying to be a little more grounded. And I think that they are distinctly different flavors that will appeal to some people will like both, but I think there's certainly people who will like one or the other. I think they're different enough that if you look at them, they shouldn't be lumped together, but I think that's a natural thing of TV critics, you know, that you're just going to go, oh, they're both sort of in the law arena. You know, there's a reason why there are a lot of law shows. There are a lot of interesting stories there, and we are, even in the title, Fairly Legal, it's law adjacent, and it's not about lawyers. Kate's not a lawyer, but it's about the problems that you might, people in conflict trying to find a way to solve them. David always has a very particular and distinctive take on things, as do I, but I hope that people will take a look at both. I hope we've provided, you know, I think our job as writers and producers is to provide something very distinctive. And my biggest fear would be that nobody hates the show, because if nobody hates it, nobody loves it. If everyone just thinks it's okay and it's just like wallpaper, that would be really disappointing, because it's very difficult to get a show made and on the air. So it's okay,
Michael, for somebody to say, hey, this show off the block is not as maybe to my taste as I think, but maybe you can get something out of it, like the way Stephen S. Tonight did off the first episode of Spartacus. His first episode, you just talked to, and we had him on the show last year as well, was panned by the critics, but the show grew as people found out that, hey, the substance is getting there, we're getting our rhythm, we're getting our tone, and voila, the audience grew.
Absolutely. And listen, you also know very well, I mean, obviously you have an encyclopedic knowledge of television, but, you know, probably the best reviewed show of last year was Terriers. and a show that I personally thought was terrific. But it seems to me that at this point in history, particularly with traditional media, is the greatest disconnect between what critics like and what audiences like. And I think anyone who tries to write too much toward, well, this is what people will want or what critics will want, loses their way. We're all just trying to tell stories that we believe passionately about and hoping that at that moment in time they're embraced by a segment of the audience. That's all we can ask for. But there's no way to predict where it's going to go.
Right. And we had Sean Ryan and Ted Griffith, the creators and producers of Terry's, on our show last fall after they had the rave reviews. And they were concerned about the low audience. They said, hey, we hope they'll find us. It unfortunately did not work out. And John Landgraf, the head of FX, has been, I think, very vocal to the press, to his credit, and being some self, sort of being self-searching about why didn't this work? Could we have done anything different to market or promote the show? Which raises the thing, in a time right now where there are so many cable shows, both known and unknown, that are making it this so far this year, what's your thought about how, USA is building the show up? Are they getting, the tone you want? How do you feel about the way your show's being promoted and marketed pre-launch?
I think that I'm in awe of the USA marketing department. I started out, my first job was in public relations, and I know a bit about it and about advertising, and I think they're great at creating an image that breaks through the clutter for your show, and also correctly identifying what it is, because you don't want to advertise one thing and have it be another. You just want to say, this is what it is, would you like to come in and visit for a while? And I think they've done a masterful job of it. And, there are a lot of, you were saying with your previous guest, that there are so many things debuting, there are so many channels. When we no longer live in the era of the 40 share, so where everyone is niche casting, whether you're on a one of the traditional broadcast networks or in cable, you just want to write and produce strongly within that niche. But there's a place for every kind of show. You might have 10 shows you adore, all of which I can't stand, and vice versa. But that's why there are so many channels. That's the great thing about this time in television. Because you can turn on your dial and watch, you can watch 8 hours of phenomenal programming, entertaining, funny, dramatic, that's of an exquisite quality, and I think possibly the greatest time ever for that.
One of the shows that made it this past season and is growing its audience, Michael, is The Good Wife on CBS. And I think the reason why is because it has never really been noted as a lawyer show. It's more of a workplace drama, a personal drama. Juliana Margulies' wonderful performance, the rest of that cast, et cetera, the way the writing goes. In fact, Juliana Margulies usually said, it's a cable show on broadcast. It just happens to be on CBS, and they're doing a great job, getting the word out. Do you want your show to be as much a mold breaker or a road taker as that show?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great model, because a lot of our show is about the personal lives of our main characters, and it's not about anything to do with the technical aspects of the law. It's about, we get re-engaged with the characters involved in the story for that week, and in a very relatable way. But also, a lot of the season-long arcs are about Kate and her ex-husband and her relationship with her father's wife, who her stepmother, who's her age, and also the managing partner of the law firm. So the interpersonal aspects of going to work and the interpersonal aspects of the cases are what the show is about. None of it is about the procedure of the law. In fact, in the pilot, there's a scene, the one scene that takes place in a courtroom takes place there so that Kate can be thrown out of it, to say expressly that this is not a show that takes place in the courtroom at all, and that's not what it's about. But The Good Wife is a great model, and they do a fantastic job, of balancing all those elements. And they're close enough to things we've seen to be relatable and yet completely fresh in the way they execute them.
Well, you can see for yourself how Fairly Legal is executed, because it premieres this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on USA Network, right after the season premiere of Royal Pains. Very nice doubleheader to catch on USA. And for more details, and by the way, check your local listings for where USA is available on your digital cable or satellite system. And for more details about the program, www.usanetwork.com. That's www.usanetwork, all one phrase, .com. Michael Sardo, the creator and executive producer of Fairly Legal, pleasure to have you with us. Good luck with the show Thursday night, and let's hope for a wonderful run.
Thanks very much, Simon. I appreciate it. Great talking to you.
Same here. Take care.
Bye.
Michael Sardo from Fairly Legal on USA, joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up in our next half hour, one of my favorite people covering television, the former TV editor of the New York Post, now a columnist with Fancast.com. We're talking about Adam Buckman. We'll talk to him about the Golden Globe winners, a very interesting start to this television year of 2011, and a whole lot more. This is Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We are the internet radio program that covers the world of television, and we're joining you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can catch us always on our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04, as well as on podcasts, available through iTunes.com, Zoom.net, another wonderful website you can download stuff on your mobile device to the fine folks at Sonovite. Once again, coming up on Friday, we'll have Fred Ruckel. He and his newlywed wife, Natasha, have a log cabin in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York. They call it their dream house, but getting it up and running was anything but a dream. The show is on DIY Network Sunday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and Fred will be here live to tell us all about the experience, which he caught from start to finish through the magic of videotape. And Sean Compton, the program chief of Tribune Broadcasting, the owners of WGN America, still the superstation covering most of the country, just got started on Time Warner Cable here in New York, and we'll find out what WGN America's current and future superstation status is. Does include a lot of original programming. We will find out. That's Friday here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And we'd love to hear from you. You have a thought about TV? You like our guests, our topics? You would like to see some people on our program or topics you wanted to discuss, let us know. I'd like to hear your communication and see it too. You see it by email. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And if you have an idea for a regular feature or show to know, we'd like to know that too. Is there a show like Terriers or Lights Out or Fairly Legal you think deserves more attention? Well, we've got the outlet to give it that attention. All you have to do is when you email me, give us the name of the show, the network it's on, a few cents about why you like the show and why you think the rest of America and the world might. And if we use your suggestion on our program, you, that's right, you, get the credit. So email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name, where you're emailing from. Again, if you have an idea for a show to know, the name of the show, the network it's on, your thoughts about why we should highlight it. And if we do, you get the credit. simonapple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember, we really love hearing what you have to say. It does matter. So say it with an email. Once again, if you have a question or comment for our upcoming guest, Adam Buckman from Fancast.com, don't keep silent. Sound off at 1-646-652-2906 on this Martin Luther King Monday holiday afternoon. That's 1-646-652-2906. No chat room today. Back in operation on Friday. Take a little holiday for this MLK Day. When we return, Adam Buckman from Fancast.com, the Golden Globe TV winners, and more news notes. But right now, near the top of the hour, let's pause again for web identification. The best internet radio on the planet is here, and you have an ear to it. www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 7 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Fly Lady and Friends, Unclub Your World with the Fly Lady herself and her great group of people. That's Thursdays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific time, here only on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome or welcome back, as the case may be, Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from the executive office of Premium Cable Network Stars, located near Bryant Park in Midtown, New Weather, York, Manhattan to be exact. We're happy to have you with us on this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday edition. Hope you're having a great Monday afternoon wherever you're listening to us across America, across the world here on BTR. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, Adam Buckman from Fancast.com, get it to us. That's 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Adam joins us shortly here in New York, but right now, more news notes. Could DirecTV become the home of the Kennedys? Left without a place to premiere this spring, when History Channel reversed its decision to play the controversial eight-hour miniseries. A DirecTV spokesperson says the matter is under consideration there, and no decision yet. So far, HBO, Showtime, FX, and Stars have nixed a play. Separately, at the end of reliable sources on CNN yesterday, host Howard Kurtz noted that extramarital sex scenes on a draft script provoked the outcry by members of the Kennedy family and historians against the presentation of this miniseries. There's no blackout of Sinclair-owned television stations among Time Warner Cable's 14 main customers today. That's because Time Warner and Sinclair reached a new carriage deal over the weekend involving 26 Sinclair TV stations around the nation. The previous deal expired this past Friday. Before we move on to Adam Buttman, a rundown of the TV winners of the Golden Globe Awards last night. Glee on Fox won 3 awards, Best Comedy Musical Series, and a pair for supporting performances by Jane Lynch and Chris Cocker. HBO picked up 2 of the 3 drama category honors for Boardwalk Empire, a series, and its lead star, Steve Buscemi. Sons of Anarchy's Katie Sagal won Best Drama Series Actress. Lead comedy actor went to Jim Parsons of The Big Bang Theory on CBS. Actress to Laura Linney for Showtime's The Big C. In the combo miniseries made for movie categories, personal note, I wish there were separate categories for both, but the prize best project winner, Carlos, the 5-hour miniseries running last October on Sundance Channel. It will be replayed there Thursday night, and then next month on Video On Demand. Both acting awards in this section went to HBO Bio Movies. Al Pacino as Dr. Jack Kevorkian in You Don't Know Jack, and Claire Danes' Emmy-winning portrait of Temple Grandin. And now joining us live here in New York, one of my favorite people covering television for so many years, the former television editor of the New York Post, and now regular columnist with Fancast.com, wonderful website. We welcome back to the program after a year and a half, first time around, Adam Buttman. Adam, glad to be with you.
So nice to be here, Simon. You bring such energy to this show. I hope I am equal to it.
You definitely do. It's great to have you aboard. What did you think of the Golden Globe winners last night?
You know, I don't have any beefs with them. I sometimes puzzle over what the Golden Globes stand for, Simon. You know, if when you're looking, for one thing, there's not a list of, well, I guess there are nominees, so I guess we could choose from them and see if they made the right decisions or not. But everybody on here is very talented and very worthy. And as I've always said, because I've been a TV critic for a long time, I almost never critique the actors. You know, the level of acting on TV generally is quite strong. In fact, I don't know how people actually make their choices among the nominees for the eventual winner, because there's always a lot of strong people. I mean, who's going to deny Al Pacino as Jack Kevorkian? I mean, it's one of the great performances of the year. And Steve Buscemi in Boardwalk Empire, I mean, that was probably the only real standout new drama on television anywhere last year. Katie Sagal was a neat surprise, though. Just because Sons of Anarchy doesn't go around getting awarded very much, you know. So I have no beef with it. It's just it's an interesting thing that they do. It's sort of like a miniature Emmy Awards. You know, they have these sort of weird categories of, you know, it's just actor and actress and a couple of other ones, you know, supporting actor.
It's amazing to me, Adam, that NBC got this show off the ground last night because there's been so much behind the scenes controversy about the Golden Globes. The people who run them, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, there's lawsuits going on against Phil Burke, the head of the association. Dick Clark Productions is livid about, which produces the show every year.
Yes.
Their contract expires. They're in a lawsuit with them. It's amazing that this program got on the air to begin with.
Well, I guess what happens is, you know, in spite of all that behind-the-scenes stuff, there's still a contractual obligation to fill 3 hours with a Golden Globe Award telecast. And, you know, I think there's a lot of behind-the-scenes that takes place as far as the corralling and wrangling of talent and crowds and celebrities. It's always a miracle to me when award shows, you know, start off on time. Because it always seems to me from the pre-shows that you see on the red carpets that, you know, half the people are still outside or something. But somehow these things can start and end when they need them to start. And then the big thing everybody's talking about is Ricky Gervais. And did he cross the line in his kind of a raunchy, insult-oriented comedy that he did? What did you think?
I'll tell you, he had a lot of inside jokes. I don't know if the audience got it, but he was, from the get-go, on fire with these inside jokes about the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, about the nominees who didn't get in.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that translated into a good viewership.
Well, the viewership was 17 million, just under 17 million. It was up slightly from a year ago. I think what's more significant is that 2 years ago, when Ricky did not host the awards, it was, you know, it was about 2.5 million fewer viewers. So I think he did bring viewers to the Golden Globes. And whether the public was put off or not, well, I'll leave that to the public. I mean, we have some stories on fancast.com today where a lot of readers have weighed in with their comments. And frankly, a lot of our commenters seem to be anti-Ricky. Now, my problem with the whole thing is comedy today is such a wide open thing. And, you know, if you see Ricky Gervais in his HBO specials, this guy gets into some really what used to be known as filthy stuff. But what comedians would probably refer to as, you know, the nitty-gritty of just being really honest and open about everything, whether it's sex or bodily functions, or in the case of his monologue on the Golden Globes, you know, focusing on the most negative aspects of some of the people in the audience and in Hollywood. I thought some of what he said was over the line, but the thing is, how does he know what's over the line given today's acceptance of just about anything? You know, you're telling a comedian, go out there and be a comedian because, you know, we hired you to be outrageous Ricky Gervais. And he goes and does that, and everybody gets mad at him. So it's just really interesting. There's a kind of a hypocrisy that goes on.
The one thing I would suggest is that the made-for-TV and miniseries category gets put into two. I don't think there's any way you judge a miniseries against a made-for-TV movie. And certainly when you had HBO films like Temple Grandin and You Don't Know Jack,
yeah,
and you go up against miniseries like Carlos, which was a big breakthrough win for the Sundance Channel,
yes,
or Pillars of the Earth from Starz, which is where we're originating our show today from,
mm-hmm,
or The Pacific, which everybody thought was, that may have been the big surprise of the night. The Pacific looked like it was going to be, you know, the clean, it's going there, no issue.
Well, yeah.
Like New England Patriots were going to, you know, demolish the Jets yesterday and didn't.
Yeah.
It's just very difficult to how do you judge a made-for-TV movie up against a miniseries?
Well, this is what I was trying to get to, and poorly at the outset of our interview, which was that I'm not sure what the Golden Globes are here to do. It's such the opposite of a comprehensive awards program. And you point out one small part of that argument, which is that they don't even have enough categories to account for, you know, miniseries versus TV movies. And when you only have, you know, hardly any categories to accommodate for all the great made-for-television movies and miniseries in a given year, what's really the point of this award show? It just seems almost unfair to just because of space or something, disqualify so much great work. Now, I guess we don't expect the Golden Globes to be like the Emmys and give out awards in 100 categories. But like I said before, I'm not quite sure what the Golden Globes are. In other words, the Foreign Press Association in Hollywood liked Claire Danes and Temple Grandin over all other performances like that. And now there's nothing wrong with that. She was great. But is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association really watching that much television, you know? And unlike Oscars, I don't know if do the Golden Globes have a reflection or an effect on Emmy Awards? You know, it's just,
I think it might certainly would take Boardwalk Empire, Adam. It might help them in terms of, I think Boardwalk Empire is a shoe-in for an Emmy nomination for Best Drama and many, as many of the drama series categories as possible.
I agree. And when it comes to something like You Don't Know Jack, that already got an Emmy Award, didn't it? In other words,
yeah
in other words, that's the other thing about these. They're not in sync with the Emmys or the TV season in the way that we envision the TV season being something that, you know, goes from autumn to autumn, you know, September to September. So, I mean, I have no beef with the awards. I'm not a huge Glee fan, I must say. It's a well-made show. I don't know if Jane Lynch really deserves supporting actress. She's quite good, but I think there's a couple of dozen other people who would have been just as good as her. I think Chris Colfer is a revelation on the show, and it's really neat to see him win.
Adam Buckland from Fancast.com joining us live here on Tomorrow We Televised. You have a question or comment for Adam? Join in the conversation, 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Adam, let's go from awards, specifically the Globes, to the first couple of weeks of 2011 in television. It seems that every new returning cable program mm-hmm. is off to the races. I have never seen, and I'm covering television for 30 years plus,
yeah.
I've never seen 2 weeks where shows that were known, shows that weren't known, unknown, have all hit big, from Jersey Shore on MTV
mm-hmm.
to Beyond Scared Screen on A&E, to what I think has been a huge surprise so far, The Game on BET, a
mm-hmm.
show that was on CW, didn't do better than 4 million homes, off the air for a year, BET runs the reruns, and then BET premiered the show last Tuesday, 2 episodes, 10 to 11 o'clock Eastern Time.
Mm-hmm.
No publicity outside BET. No cable network promos, no local system promos, no posters here in New York or elsewhere in the country. And lo and behold, it gets nearly 8 million viewers. And the show after that, new series called Let's Stay Together, gets nearly 5 million viewers. That
mm-hmm.
is astonishing.
The average person is searching far and wide for stuff to watch. I mean, for me, one of the most eye-catching networks on television is A&E. I can't get enough of those shows that they have. They're absolutely shocking. You know, Beyond Scared Straight is a great show. It's a very arresting show, not to make a stupid pun. But, you know, when you're switching channels and you come across some, you know, heavy-set murder convict, female, let's say, in a penitentiary yelling at some hapless teenager, it's something you're going to stop and watch. Now, unfortunately, as from a critic's standpoint, Simon, some of the shows you mentioned, such as Beyond Scared Straight and Jersey Shore, you know, they make you stop and stare because of the spectacle that they're putting on. And it is shocking to me that the 8.5 or 9 million people are watching Jersey Shore now.
8.6 last Thursday.
I mean, I guess I'm going to, as I get older and I'm about your age, you know, I'm going to increasingly sound like that old guy shaking his fist on the porch. But, you know, I watch Jersey Shore and I really can't believe that this is what we've come to. I mean, all power to MTV for putting on a show that's popular. And people talk about it in a way like I think half the people who talk about Jersey Shore don't really watch it. I watch it, and it's, you would think these people were speaking a foreign language. You know, it's always just F this and F that, and I don't even know what's going on that show.
But it just seems, Adam, that we're in a TV season where, first of all, the broadcast networks entered with no buzz for their new shows.
Compared to a year ago,
they had buzz for Glee and Modern Family and The Good Wife and Inside Los Angeles, and this year it's been Zippo, and the shows have not risen in ratings compared, as opposed to programs on cable. And then you have the Bowl Championship Series, you have the launch of the Oprah Winfrey Network, you have all these shows premiering the last week, and then you have the batch of shows premiering this week, starting tonight with Being Human on Sci-Fi, Skins getting a lot of attention already, a lot of it negative on MTV.
Yeah, and that'll make
that will make for
ratings, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, continue.
It's just incredible, this huge disparity in buzz. And even in Los Angeles the last 2 weeks, when you had the TV Critics Tour, Television Critics Association Tour, the reviews I've seen of the tour has been broadcast networks, little buzz, little reaction, cable shows, lots of buzz, lots of reaction.
Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing that as, you know, we receive, as you do, I receive shows in advance, and I get the shows from, like, NBC, for example. I mean, that network, it's almost as if that network is disappearing before our eyes. Have you ever thought about that? You know, they have these comedies that everybody talks about, nobody watches, like Community and the Office and 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation. They're coming out with shows like The Cape about a superhero. I mean, how many superheroes or how many 14-year-olds are there that NBC seems to have to target these people? And I'm just really shocked at that. And you're right. You know, the networks, the cable networks put out a new show. Like, it can be some little show. That show about storage units on A&E, Storage Wars. You know it's the highest rated show on A&E? Do you realize this?
Yeah, I do.
You know, and, you know, it's just a little show. Probably the show itself doesn't cost that much, but they put so much money into promoting them. I have to hand it to them. You know, they can launch the smallest show under the sun, and you'll see it on every bus in New York City, you know. And it's just really interesting that they have managed somehow to, as you say or indicate, to create excitement that the networks have not. I mean, what does ABC have? They just put out that new Doctor show.
Off the Map.
Off the Map, which is really, and any viewer will tell you this, without even seeing it, they'll say, well, this is just Grey's Anatomy in the jungle. You know, I don't want to see another one of those, you know. And the exception
well,
to this rule...
Sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
Well, the exception to this rule seems to be CBS. CBS continues to program the shows that critics and journalists and the keepers of so-called buzz don't even talk about. And yet, they're beating the other networks by a lot, you know, with just that sort of regular lineup of sturdy shows. And it's not as if they're in your face all the time. So I think what's happened is CBS has kind of started to dominate everything. NBC is just disappearing a little bit. Fox has its high-rated stalwarts, such as Glee and American Idol, which is coming up this week. And ABC kind of gets along with some buzzed about high-rated shows like Lost, which isn't on anymore, and you know, Dancing with the Stars, you know, and The Bachelor a little bit, I guess. But to me, it's not as interesting as what's laid before you on cable these days.
One could argue, by the way, Adam, that once the Sunday Night Football, NBC would be imploding
yeah.
all over the place.
Yeah, you
which
think.
raised another point too, which is about the fact that the Comcast NBC Universal merger has not gone through. It is impeding NBC's ability with a bunch of new executives, headed by Robert Greenblatt, the former head of programming at Showtime, who did a great
yes.
job there, to do their thing. You also have ABC, who has Paul Lee coming up from ABC Family, who is trying to revitalize that network. He certainly has to play with all the chips he's gotten, and ABC's issue is they can't launch a drama series, it seems, to save their life at the moment. What do you make of particularly those two networks and where they're at?
Well, it really is interesting how long this Comcast deal is taking. And there has been some journalism about the delays and the issues, but it just seems as if it's sort of a government bureaucracy is preventing this deal from taking place. And I guess we're starting pilot season, and the fear is that, you know, there'll be no leadership in the programming department at NBC. Because the truth is, I don't think Greenblatt is yet officially in the job. Is that true? I think I just read this somewhere else. So, meanwhile, an entire network, one of the greatest broadcasting companies in the history of the planet, is just sort of left to languish. And I guess then the second question is, you know, what will Comcast bring to the table to revive NBC? I don't really see them having any sort of swashbuckling programming geniuses who are going to come in and inject a bit of show business pizzazz into whatever NBC is doing to bring it the kind of ratings that a network like that should have. You know, I sometimes watch NBC and I'm switching channels to it. It seems to me that the biggest loser is always on. Like, that's the thing that's on. Like, you know, it isn't, but it always seems like it's on like 4 days a week or something.
And it's not having a great year ratings-wise either. The ratings are down. And
no,
so is parents
not.
Of the show.
Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. When ratings start to skid to the extent they are on NBC, you wind up not, you know, if you're going to promote on your own air, you wind up promoting to no one. You know, so it sort of things have a tendency to shrink. ABC's identity over the years, Simon, has always been a puzzle to me. They had a couple good seasons a few years ago. I think they were sort of at their height when they had Lost and Grey's Anatomy and Desperate Housewives were all at their full strength. Now I think Grey's Anatomy is a little long in the tooth, and I think Desperate Housewives is. I don't know what their identity is. I really don't. They seem to be half reality and half something else. And the bright spot, I guess, is you know, Modern Family. You know, it's a great and creative show. A Cougar Town is a disaster, and it's got to go. And this is the thing about ABC. They don't seem to be able to put together a whole night, you know, like CBS on Monday, for example. You know, so it's a whole night that they have that everybody loves. You know, they like the sitcom about the two overweight people, you know, Mike and Molly. And I just marvel at their way to aim it right down the middle at CBS. It's really great.
Adam Buckman from Fantast.com, our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with Adam, with you on this Martin Luther King Jr. Monday holiday afternoon, live from New York. Thanks for joining us. You'll have an opportunity to get your questions or comments in, so do it on the phone, 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. 652-2906. Time we have left, I want to switch gears
yeah.
to some other things that are going on in television.
Yeah.
We had the Consumer Electronics Show first week of the year,
mm-hmm.
and what really hit me, even though I wasn't there, from all the reporting and all the analysis, is 3D is still trying to make it.
Yeah.
Interactive television looks like it's on the precipice of being a mass medium. Every TV set maker is coming out with apps. Google TV, although they're supposed to be their coming out party, wasn't as planned because of a software glitch. They're trying to upgrade that. But it seems that you have 3D and interactive television and video telephony
mm-hmm.
and home monitoring are all out there trying to be the next big thing for the public.
Have you actually seen 3D television?
Yes.
And does it wow you or what?
It does. I think with sports television, like the Masters or college football or the Bowl Championship Series, it gives you unique angles on the sport. I think the issue is, will the public see 3D in the same way as high definition, which is, it's so invaluable to me that I can watch any kind of show, from a game show to a soap opera to a drama to a sitcom in 3D. And I think the jury's out on that because we haven't had a lot. We've had the yin-yang. I won't buy 3D sets until we see the content, and the content people are saying we won't make the content until the universe of films available. I think we get our first big test
mm-hmm.
this winter when ESPN 3D goes 24/7, and then we get the new Sony Discovery IMAX channel, which is going to have a lot of original content.
You know, I'd be concerned about 3D sports, to tell you the truth, and how the pictures are going to be manipulated to such an extent that it won't look real anymore. And that's just something that I look out for. You know, to me, sports television generally is the most advanced television that there is. Like, if you watch how they produce a typical NFL game, it just dazzles me, you know, how they do that. And to me, the 3D option just would seem to be superfluous. But I guess sports does always gravitate toward the sort of the new things. Now, what would be the next big thing? I don't know. Here comes the old guy with his fist on the porch again, Simon. But, you know, interacting with my television, I don't know. To me, that doesn't have the value that it does for some younger people. I guess they're talking about, you know, if they're watching Jersey Shore, there will be a way for them to talk to the show on their television screen while they're watching. I guess this is fun for some people. To me, television is a very passive pursuit. And personally, I don't really need to become any more active in it than to just watch it. And to tell you the truth, I doubt if I'm alone just because I'm 51. I think that's how a lot of people watch television. Some of these other things seem like gimmicks to me. So 3D does, just only because we've seen the history of 3D since the 1950s. It comes and it goes, and it comes back and it leaves, and it sort of catches on and sort of doesn't. And I understand that the 3D televisions, there already were some for sale during the Christmas season, am I right?
Yeah.
And they weren't popular, you know. So there again, it's probably a technology that isn't worth the ordinary person's investment yet, because there probably isn't enough 3D programming. But as you say, ESPN's coming out with a whole network. Is that going to be everywhere?
It's going to be in Time Warner Cable, Comcast, DirecTV, I believe, is going to run it. So all the current affiliates of ESPN 3D, which is like an every so often
mm-hmm.
service, will now be able to get 24/7.
So and it's a basic service? Or do you have to pay?
Probably digital basic. You may have to pay a little extra for it. Not sure.
But if you have a regular television, what will it look like?
You have to have a 3D set to have it.
Oh, to have it at all. Okay. Well,
right.
I wish them luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the other things that really interest me about technology and television is sort of the go everywhere, watch it anywhere television, you know, whether it's on a tablet or whether it's on your phone. Again, it's a very interesting thing to me that people will be out in the world going about their business, but while they're walking down the street, they'll watch an episode of Modern Family on their phone. And I suppose this was inevitable because television does seek to be everywhere. And if the technology exists, television wants to be there. It's sort of like how TVs are in every restaurant and every bar and every store now, you know.
And airports too.
Yes, airports and train stations and wherever they are. They're in newsstands and they're everywhere. So TV is sort of like floodwaters in the way that it seeks its own level. Now, how the networks benefit by distributing their programming over more outlets remains to be seen. One would assume that it's all about building bigger audiences for a higher advertising payday. I mean, is that what this is?
It very well could. Before we leave, because running out of time, what's your next Fancast column dealing with?
Well, today we've been covering the give and take between Ricky Gervais and the powers that be at the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. They are now trading quotes and statements about whether he went over the line or not. And he, as a comedian, he's saying he didn't do enough, and they're saying he went over the line. Other than that, this week I have a sit-down meeting with Paul Tuttle Jr. He's Paul Jr. from American Chopper. He's going to tell me what's up with that show on Discovery, the new version of the show called Senior versus Junior, where he's at odds with his father. Plus, later in the week, there will be a column on JFK and what television will be doing to mark the 50th anniversary of John F. Kennedy's inauguration in 1961 later this week.
Quickly before I let you go, Adam, what do you think about the Kennedy situation with History Channel? Do you think somebody will pick the show up?
They might. I guess it will have to be somebody who is not in business with Carolyn Kennedy, because this is what the issue was, apparently. Great story in the Sunday New York Post about it, that she put the kibosh on it because she's in various literary deals with ABC and Disney and Hyperion, you know, the publishing companies that they own. And so she put the kibosh on it somehow, you know.
Well, we'll see if DirecTV picks it up, and I still think that AMC, USA, or TNT should grab it.
Well, it's certainly greatly diminished now that, I mean, some people would argue that more people will want to watch it to see what the fuss was. I think the opposite will be the case, because it won't be on as widely distributed a network as it could have been.
And as a precedent for it, Showtime in 2003 with the Reagans. Which
it reminded me of that. It really did.
You can catch Adam Buckman's work at fancast.com. It's FANCAST.com, and I promise you, it is great reading. Adam, wonderful to have you back.
You're the greatest, Simon.
Have a great rest of your holiday, and thanks for joining us again.
You too. Bye.
Take care. Coming up Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we will have Fred Rucker from the new DIY series, Dream House. It's on Sunday nights at 8:30 Eastern Pacific Time. He's not only the producer, he is the co-subject with his newlywed wife, Natasha. The idea of turning a piece of ground in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York into a log cabin was anything but a dream. He'll be here live to tell us all about it. Also, Sean Compton, head of Columbia Tribune Broadcasting, about Superstation WGN America, its current and future state. Remember, you can catch us 24/7 at www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. And check us out on podcast. We'd love to have you join us 24/7 at iTunes.com, Zoom.net, other places provided by Sonobite, TiVo, and Cable in the Classroom. And email me. Let me know what you think about today's program, our guests and topics, and what you'd like to hear down the road, and your ideas for a show to know. That email just one more time, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. We want to hear what's on your mind. And once again, thank you to the wonderful people at STARS here in New York for allowing us to use their facilities the second year in a row. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Hilly Luong and Matt Bader. On location coordinators, Oscar Apnila and Chelsea Burrows. Podcast distribution provided by Sonobite. Words to your ears. For more, surf sonobite.com. Podcast director and theme music composer, Philip Salisbury. But tomorrow will be televised. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from the Executive Office of STARS in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your holiday afternoon and your week ahead. We'll catch you back here Friday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.